Welcome back to 32 Fans. I'm Alex Chester, and with me, as always, is Akiva Wieneker. Akiva, how are you today?
I'm doing great. I'm excited to finish up this bracket.
Are you excited about your Jets signing, Matt Forte?
Yeah, I think it's a fine. I saw Bill Barnwell gave it a C+, but it's a little bit more money than you'd like to give a 30-year-old running back. I mean, he's probably going to be, you know, I think, did Fred Jackson retire? You know, Forte is basically going to be the oldest or second oldest running back in the league, starting running back in the league this year. But, you know, his skill set ages well in that he's, you know, pass catching. Like, at worst, he's a very good third down back. So $4 million a year is not exactly a tremendous amount of money for a good player. I think the team that I would be most concerned about, I was just thinking about, is the Cleveland Browns. Because when the Jets hired John Idzik, you remember their old GM before Mike McCagnan, or however you pronounce his name, Idzik couldn't make any moves. And like, all the free agents were gone by the time he was ready to, do anything. And what I saw out of the Browns is, and they have they hired their basically general counsel as a GM, which maybe gives you hope one day that you could be promoted to GM if you ever were general counsel somewhere, right?
Yeah.
And
sure.
And they hired one of the Jets, the Mets assistant GMs. And there's so many cooks in that kitchen that they didn't do anything, and they lost a lot of good players already, and they didn't have a lot of good players to begin with. So the cupboard is really bare there. And there are reasons why they haven't cut Manziel, but it's a little strange also. So to me,
I think they're waiting for him to get suspended so that they can get the money from the suspension off the books.
Right, but I don't think that's probably going to happen in time for them to be able to do that. I think ultimately they're probably going to have to cut him first. But that's probably the team that right now would be most concerned about. The Giants' moves are really strange. They spent so much money, which is nice. Like, it's what the Jets did last year, spend so much money, but it really handicaps you next year when you're going to have to cut legitimately good players and make some uncomfortable decisions. So what about the Vikings? How are you feeling about the Vikings' move so far?
Well, the Vikings' biggest move, which was signing Alex Boone, also got a C+ from Bill Barnwell, which, as I told you, my dad was quite
maybe he's a
about.
Comedy Bang Bang fan, because if you listen to Comedy Bang Bang, C+ is the highest possible grade.
Yeah. Look, first of all, in terms of Forte, I know the Chris Ivory signing also got by definition, any running back free agent signing will get a bad grade, because investing any money in running backs in this day and age is not a good idea. And look, the Jets had a guy, Chris Ivory, who basically came out of nowhere to be one of the best running backs in football, at least the first half of last season. So, but I think you're right. Forte is a good third down back. For the Vikings, look, I don't pretend to know enough about other teams' offensive linemen to know. So the Vikings' biggest needs are offensive line, and then secondarily, it would be receiver. So they've signed one offensive lineman. The best guard on the market, they lost to the Raiders, and then they turned and got, Boone as a consolation prize. So I'll hold out hope. I'll give them an incomplete, and we'll see, hopefully, whether this is supposed to be a very deep draft.
For defensive linemen and maybe offensive linemen, not in general.
Well, what I've read is for offensive linemen and receivers, which is the Vikings' two needs.
Really? But not top heavy, but maybe some depth.
Yeah. But the point is, so hopefully the Vikings.
In general, it's considered a weak draft.
Yeah, but I'm looking more like second, third, fourth
rounds. Okay.
Yeah, I'm not looking top of the draft. The Vikings aren't at the top of the draft, right. Obviously.
Okay, so now let me ask you one more thing that maybe will be outdated by the time we post this podcast, because it seems like it could be dealt with today. But so the musical chairs of quarterbacks right now, the teams that don't have a QB or aren't happy with their current QB right now are the Jets, the Browns, the Broncos, and the 49ers are in the mix.
So, the Kaepernick situation is so weird.
Okay,
like, I thought the whole reason they got Kelly was to work with Kaepernick.
Yeah, it makes no sense. Right, you're not going to get, maybe outside of the draft where you could get a guy with huge upside, you're not just going to randomly get a quarterback better than Kaepernick. So forgetting about where it happens, so let's take it from the Jets' perspective, because I'm a Jets fan. If you're the Jets, would you give up the 20th pick in the draft, your first round pick, for Kaepernick, who's making $15 million a year? Right now, what they're reporting in the last hour is that it's a three-way shindig between the Jets, Browns, and Broncos. And listen, the Niners will trade it to whoever offers a better pick. The Jets have better picks in every round than the Broncos, so the Jets can always top the Broncos' offer.
I would not trade the 20th overall pick for him. I don't think so.
But let me make an argument. If we can't re-sign Fitzpatrick, and less, if the Broncos trade for Kaepernick, then the only possible contenders for Fitzpatrick would be San Francisco, which I can't imagine how badly, they might want him, but can't imagine how badly they're going to go after Ryan Fitzpatrick. Like, is that Kelly's guy? It could be. He's had worse guys, or the Browns, who don't seem to be super high in Fitzpatrick. If Kaepernick, who is horrendous this year. But if he could get back anywhere near even just the 2014 standard.
Anyway, well, he wasn't horrendous, to be
fair. Oh, he was really bad this year. Look up his numbers.
The Jets were 10-6 with Ryan Fitzpatrick, who was a nobody, right? Yeah, because if they had good enough receivers, I mean, they had great receivers. I mean, they have a great offensive line, and that's why you plugged in Ryan Fitzpatrick, who is, you know, sort of the definition of a journeyman, and they went 10-6. So that argument could go two ways. Either that's an argument why you don't really need to invest in a quarterback, or that's an argument why, well, if you get Kaepernick and he's back to his old self, then this is a Super Bowl team.
Yeah, I think it's worth the risk. I think you have nothing until you have a quarterback. I mean, it's a weird time to say this, that we just had a quarterback who is beyond shot win the Super Bowl, but we don't have the Broncos defense. Nobody, you know, the Broncos defense was, if not historically good, then at least the best of the last few years. So if you don't have an A++ defense, then I don't know. And truthfully, the Jets look like they're probably going to have to trade Mo Wilkerson, who's one of the best defensive players in the NFL, just because his, you know, this is the last year of his deal. They franchised him, but they're not going to be able to afford him. And Kaepernick makes $15 million. So they'd literally have to trade somebody like that just to put him under the cap, which they're basically at right now, the Jets. All right, so it's fun to talk football, but let's get into what the people are here for. No, they're probably here for football, but let's finish the greatest living American bracket. But before we do,
well, at least let's get into the second round. You know, yeah, finishing, that's a big
I'd
promise.
Like to finish. Let's not promise, but I hope to finish next week. I'd like to talk some March Madness.
Are we going to discuss the Peyton Manning retirement or no?
Yeah, happy.
We've
happy,
talked about him enough, I think.
Yeah, happy trails, Peyton Manning. Okay, yeah. But is there anyone egregious that we left out? And the only person, first of all, there's the egregious Philbin. Robbie's housemate. R.I.P. Harris Whittles. That's a Harris Whittles joke. Okay, so here's the six people I have as were big misses by us. And we did well, I think, in terms of racial diversity. And we weren't making any picks based on like, oh, well, this guy's a woman. We need to have a man and, you know, we're a woman in the next round. Or we need to have more African-American people in round, you know, in make the next round. But now looking at the round of 32 as a whole, I think we have 25 men and 7 women.
Yeah, so I emailed you the demographic breakdown of the final 32. Mm-hmm. Gender-wise, 25 men, 7 women, which is not ideal. But to be fair, the reality is that in high profile positions across the world, there are more men than women. You know, we live in a sexist society and we're reflecting that sort of in this bracket. You know, we would like to have more women, but the reality is, you know, the leaders in most industries are not women, and that might not be right, but that is the reality right now, sure. Unfortunately. Mm-hmm. In race, we had 20 whites, 12 blacks. Pretty good breakdown there, you know.
Yeah, but no Hispanics and no Asians, which is not a great job. But
no Asian Americans, no Latinos, no Native Americans.
But who did we miss, really, is the question. Who is the obvious, you know, person we missed?
We had people in the 64.
Oh, we had a lot of people in the 64, yeah. But who did we miss?
Yeah, anyway, you know, Yo-Yo Ma got a victory. He just, you know, in the play-in round.
Right, that's true. Good point. Round, you know. All right, so here's the six people I have as some of them should have been on, some for sure should be on. I think Arnold Schwarzenegger for sure should have made the 68. Governor of California, coupled with like the greatest bodybuilder of all time, coupled with like an A-list movie star. I feel like those things go together. I don't know how many.
No, he's not an A-list movie star anymore.
He was. No, of course not. Of course not.
But he was in the 80s and the
90s. Yeah, for sure. So to me, all those things combined, I think you have to put him on the list.
Okay. I don't have a strong opinion there.
But I mean, he has to be there. He's got, you know, he's
all right. Good. Okay.
Ellen DeGeneres, I feel like, is a gay icon, a comedian. We didn't have a single comedian.
Yeah, you made a joke about me picking Ellen in the podcast, which I didn't really get.
What did I say?
You said to Antonio, should any comedian be on here? Alex really wanted Ellen.
That's not a joke.
Oh, well, I had never mentioned her.
Successful TV. I thought you did. Maybe somebody else said Ellen then.
I thought you were making some kind of joke like I'm a big Ellen fan, which I didn't really get. Because
I don't even know what you're talking about. But
I have no opinion about Ellen, so I thought.
No,
it was
I think I, you know, she, you know, the, it was a big deal when with her show that when
yeah
when
I remember
she
that,
came
yeah.
out on when her show she, and she, I think Oprah was her therapist, right? Did I have a fever dream that Oprah was her therapist on the show, or did that happen?
The way that she came out on the show was that she like leaned into an open mic by mistake at an airport or something, and so like everybody heard that was sort of the comedic aspect of it. I don't really
know. Oh, okay.
We were like 12 at the time.
Yes.
Yeah, it was a big deal.
This pilot guy, Chuck Yeager, another a guy for sure should have made it. Billy Graham, who you had pitched for religious leaders. I hadn't picked one, so I kind of left them all out. But Billy Graham, the more I looked into it, for sure should have been there. Martina Navratilova, I think, should have been on the list.
She's a big activist
who also is, you know, at worst, like the third best women's player and possibly the best. You know, you think she was 50-0 in the Fed Cup, which is like the Davis Cup for women, which no one cares about, but was like the best doubles player when she came back at age 48. Gloria Steinem. People said Gloria Steinem also.
Yeah, I had mentioned Gloria Steinem to you right after we recorded.
Yeah, that was a miss. So some of those people could have gone.
I thought Billy Graham was an obvious, to be honest. I sort of thought he was dead, and then I looked it up, and he's like 97.
Yeah, he's very old. He's very old.
Yeah, but I mean, but he was so in. I mean, look, he literally met every president for 60 years. He was a huge deal, and now you don't hear about him as much because he's really old, and his son is, you know, sort of a half the man that he is. But he was an obvious miss. I think also Rick Warren was a miss.
And yeah.
So I mentioned some of the demographics of the final 32. In terms of their primary field, we have seven who are in politics / government. And the way I'm doing this is I split John Glenn half between politics and half between science, because he's both an astronaut and a senator. And then Mike Bloomberg, I also split half between politics and half between business, although you could also maybe he also belongs in media. So we have seven, including two halves, who their primary field is politics, six for sports, four for film, 3.5 for business, which includes half of Bloomberg, as I said, 3 for music, 2 for media, 2 authors, I put Elie Wiesel in authors, 1.5 for science, 1 painter, 1 lawyer, and 1 fashion. So that's the primary field demographics breakdown. Yeah, so we don't have any in religion per se. Speaking of religion, our 32 includes 6 Jews, 1 Muslim, and one Kabbalist, or whatever the hell you want to call Madonna. And then the rest are either Christian or non-identified.
There's a hot take calling Obama Muslim there. Okay.
Indeed.
Let's get into that's Muhammad Ali, I imagine.
Yeah, Muhammad Ali, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So to get to now 32, if you want to follow along, I think we've both tweeted out the bracket as of the round of 32. But let's get started with the matchups here. Then the NCAA tournament never really came up with a good name for the round of 32.
Yeah, so when I was a kid, I used to call it the Thrifty 32, which is obviously a terrible name.
Is that why you had no friends?
Yeah. The thing is, the reason you don't really need a name for it is because the round of 32 only exists for one day. But then again, the Elite Eight only exists for one day, right? In other words, because you know you have the first round matchups on Thursday, Friday, and then at Friday night you have the round of 32, and then Saturday morning immediately you get down to the Sweet 16. So
I don't
know
what
exist.
Did you just say? I don't know what you're saying. Are you mean for
in March Madness, right?
Yeah.
How long does each round? Does each grouping last? You have the 64 for an entire week from Selection Sunday until Thursday.
So 32,
right?
You're at 32 Friday night.
Only exists, 32 only exists for Friday night, and then Saturday immediately start getting down to the Sweet 16. Then the Sweet 16 lasts for a whole week again.
Okay.
So you can talk about being in the Sweet 16.
I got it.
Then the Final Four lasts.
And
for
the
a whole
Elite
week.
Eight wasn't always called, like, that has, I don't think it was called the Elite Eight when I was really young.
So the Elite Eight and the round of 32 as a grouping only lasts for one night, is what I'm saying.
Well,
so that's why
two nights
really have a name.
Two nights, but I hear what you're saying.
No, one night.
Why? Because they're down to 24 after the first night?
Yeah. There's teams who are into the Sweet 16.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
So on Thursday, you can say we're into the Thrifty 32 or whatever the hell you want
Nobody,
to call it.
No one wants to call it that.
Yeah. Well, what else starts with the TH? That's the challenge.
It doesn't matter. Okay.
You want to rhyme something with 32, I guess, you know, the birdie blue 32. I don't really know.
God, let me just cut that out. Okay. George H.W. Bush versus painter Jasper Johns.
So hold on. So the other thing I just need to mention here is, you know, we were debating who we should have as a guest to be our third judge. Last week we had Antonio Mazzaro, of course.
I asked Antonio, and we're on a very specific time. We couldn't work it out.
Well, and we eliminated people. Superfan Robbie, for example, got eliminated for sending a...
He's banned right now. Temporarily banned. He's in timeout because he was upset. I had some complaints that the podcast was too liberal or too political, from some people, but Robbie's protest went too far. What was it?
Yeah. It was an NSFW photo. Let's just leave it at that.
Yeah, not cool, Robbie.
Yeah. So anyway, so I proposed that what we should do is, as a tiebreaker, we'll turn to Twitter polls. So we'll go through these 32 and we'll see how many we disagree with. And if we disagree, we'll throw it up on a Twitter poll and let the fans decide. And you vociferously argued that what we should do is vociferously argue.
Yes.
And that we have to fight it out until one of us concedes.
Until one of us gives up. Yeah. I think that's the whole point of this podcast, is that we're arguing. So I think.
So I strategically decided to give in on that argument. So that hopefully I can build some reservoir to win some future.
That's a good strategy. I like it. All right, so we don't have a third person. I do. Antonio was kind enough to send us his hot takes for this round of 32. As we realized, he couldn't do it the whole way through because That would have been literally, I mean, that would have been quite.
So he gave his opinion on the round of 32 matchups, but didn't give his opinion on every subsequent matchup because that would literally be into the millions.
It would be impossible. Matchups. Yes. Yeah. I don't even know if it's millions, but yes.
Yeah. Although I would say that most of these round of 32 matchups are pretty clear cut, I think. Yes.
I think once we get to the round of 16, it's going to be a bloodbath. So let's see how fast
and
we
also,
can get through
this. And also, just looking at the bracket overall, mm-hmm. I think clearly the lower right quadrant, I don't know if we named our quadrants, but that's
Let's name them as we go.
All right. So in the upper left, we have George H.W. Bush, Jasper Johns, Meryl Streep, Sandra Day O'Connor, Willie Mays, Bill Gates, Anna Wintour, and Oprah Winfrey. What jumps out to me about this group is that they're all pretty old. So maybe we call this the
but
senior.
But also four of our seven women are up here, too.
Yeah. So I would call this maybe the senior.
All right. You know seniors. What? I just decided that naming the brackets is not going to be funny. So let's keep going.
All right.
George H.W. Bush versus Jasper Johns. Top of the bracket here. To me, this is a no-brainer. I feel like, we're going to mention this article a couple times today. Your probably favorite person in the whole world besides me, Jeffrey Goldberg, wrote a very long article today that was a million different conversations that he had with President Obama about foreign policy over the last few months. And one thing that was interesting in the article, you read the whole article already, I'm sure, right?
Yep.
Oh, probably twice. And
it was quite long, but
you
yes,
loved it. And it was that President Obama is really a pretty big fan of the original George Bush's foreign policy.
Yeah, and Brent Scowcroft. And, you know, this is something that I mentioned a little bit on the podcast last week, that George H.W. Bush has really been elevated his reputation, mm-hmm. including in liberal circles, especially, of course, I think in all circles compared to his son. But the reality is that Jasper Johns, how he made it to the final 32 is a good question. And I'm actually looking, and he did it undefeated. He went undefeated in his playing game and in his first round matchup. So good on Jasper Johns.
Yeah, but he really, it's shocking. Like, if he really is the undisputed best American sort of like artist, he should be famous, and he's not at all famous.
But also, art is not a thing.
Not in this country. Maybe in France, you'd have an artist final four.
No, what I'm saying is, but art's not a thing where you can have an objective best, you know.
I understand, but you can have like a number. Yeah, but your stuff can go for the most money.
But isn't that Koons? You know, he's the one who sells like his $45 million.
Oh, I don't know. His stuff's gone for a lot, but I don't know. On lists, I saw Jasper Johns as the number one name. Okay, so this is
Jeff Koons. You know, he's the one who makes those giant sculptures that look like a clown makes balloon animals, you know?
He's famous for being a balloon animal guy?
You know how like a clown at a kid's birthday party will make a balloon animal of a dog?
No, let's go
on. So Jeff Koons makes like huge versions of those made out of metal and sells them for like $50 million.
I need a snoring drop. For when you say
Jeff Koons is always in articles in which artists and sort of art critics lament because he's the most famous artist in America today.
Okay, well, Jasper Johns already eliminated. We're on to the next matchup.
Okay, all right.
All right, so we have Sandra Day O'Connor against the actress Meryl Streep. To me, I feel like there's no art. Oh, so let me go back. Let me read Antonio's take. So for Johns, Herbert Walker Bush, he actually had Jasper Johns. He said Johns did more for America's iconic image than HWB did for America's actual image. Okay.
All right. I think that Antonio eliminated himself as a judge by voting for Jasper Johns.
No, listen. We put Jasper Johns in the 32. Okay. And then Meryl Streep versus SDOC. He's got Sandra Day O'Connor in a walk. Streep is a fantastic actress, he says. Her biggest impact would be cultural, but it's hard to argue that through votes and opinions, Sandra Day O'Connor's actions didn't have a bigger cultural impact than America. I agree. Sandra Day O'Connor, welcome to the round of 16, unless Chester argues, which I don't think he's gonna.
Well, here's the thing I'm gonna say about Meryl Streep.
Warning. Hot take approaching.
I think, and I'm gonna get like knocked down by lightning when I say this, but I think she's a little overrated.
Okay.
In the sense that because everybody loves her, everybody sort of has to love her, if you know what I mean. Commercially, she's not huge. You know, she's not a big name on movies. She's a critical darling. And she's almost at the point in her career where any role she does automatically is going to get nominated for an Oscar. Sort of, you said, similar to Spielberg. Any movie he makes is going to get nominated for an Oscar. And obviously, I think she is a really, really fantastic artist. But she's not a huge name the way that...
No, she can't headline
like
a movie,
Robert De Niro.
Really.
Robert De Niro didn't even make this list, which to me is kind of crazy. He was a big miss, except that we had too many actors already.
Yeah, he was originally near the list, but there were way too many actors. There was way too many Hollywood people.
Yeah. You know, I think he should have been on instead of Will Smith, and him against Meryl Streep would have been a fantastic first-round matchup.
That would be good. Yeah, but you're right. But she doesn't care. Like, she's great in movies, but she's never getting, like, very rarely getting first billing in, like, a big Hollywood movie.
Yeah, either way, I clearly agree that Sandra Day O'Connor should advance over Meryl Streep.
Okay, Willie Mays versus Bill Gates. Now, someone was really mad that we didn't have Hank Aaron in the ballot. What do you think about that?
There's no way you can put Hank Aaron above Willie Mays.
Right. So, right. Right. If there's someone who's demonstrably worse than someone else on the ballot, I think they just can't be there. Like, Magic Johnson was worse at basketball than Michael Jordan, but he got on because he has some cultural impact and stuff like that.
Yeah, and Hank Aaron had that also, for sure. Hank Aaron was probably just a little bit below Mays and Mantle as sort of the third best player in that era. And he was probably closer, frankly, to Clemente and Rose and a bunch of guys who are sort of a little bit of a tier below. Hank Aaron is one of the greatest, let's say, 30 or 40 baseball players of all time, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we have Willie Mays already.
Yeah, so Bill Gates to me in a walk here.
By the way, we didn't have Jim Brown, which I thought was a mistake.
Yeah, you had Jim Brown.
I thought he should have been ahead of, you know, Peyton Manning. We didn't have, or Tom Brady or any other quarterback, frankly.
It's not a bad point.
But either way, Bill Gates is winning this matchup.
Bill Gates, Anna Wintour versus Oprah Winfrey. To me, it's Oprah by far. I didn't want Anna Wintour in the round of 16. In the round of 32, I think fashion is garbage, and welcome to the round 16 Oprah. I will not give up. I will sit here all day. If you want to put Anna Wintour in, this podcast will never end.
Did you watch that one scene that I had referenced from The Devil Wears Prada?
If I say yes, will you move on?
Well, I'm going to send it to you because it is a very.
Are you going to make me watch the scene before we go on?
Yeah, you'll enjoy it.
Okay, I'm going to pretend to watch this once he sends it. Don't worry, guys.
Play.
All right. So Anne Hathaway, is that who this is? Is talking to Meryl Streep?
They're so different.
And who's the third person? You know who that is?
The redhead? No, I don't know who that is.
Okay. So she makes a joke about that.
Something funny.
And they're not happy.
No. No, no.
Did you see this movie?
You know, it's just the...
Yes, of course.
With your wife. Like, she forced you to watch it, or you watch it on your own?
You know, I'm still...
No, I watch it on my own.
Okay.
Learning about this stuff and...
Oh, boy. She just pulled sad stuff.
This is Anna Wintour and Meryl Streep, two of our final 32.
Okay.
Anna Wintour's in the scene?
You think this has nothing to do with you.
No, Meryl Streep is playing Anna Wintour.
Oh, I get it.
Go to your closet... And you select, that lumpy blue sweater, for instance, because you're trying to tell the world that you take yourself too seriously to care about what you put on your back. But what you don't know is that that sweater is not just blue. It's not turquoise. It's not lapis. It's actually cerulean. Okay. And you're also blithely unaware of the fact that
in
2002,
Oscar
de la Renta did a collection of cerulean gowns.
Kind of boring.
And then I think it was Yves Saint Laurent, wasn't
Luckily,
it?
Luckily, the scene's over in 30
cerulean
seconds.
Military
I'm not sure
jackets.
We're watching
I think
this.
We need a jacket here. Mm. And then cerulean quickly showed up in the collections of eight different designers.
Just listen to
that. Filtered down through the department stores and then trickled on down into some tragic casual corner where you no doubt fished it out of some clearance bin. However, that blue represents millions of dollars and countless jobs. And it's sort of comical how you think that you've made a choice that exempts you from the fashion industry when in fact you're wearing a sweater that was selected for you by the people in this room.
All right. I mean, it's not bad, but I imagine that's the best scene in the movie. Only has seven thumbs down. Do you ever give a movie a thumbs, like a video on YouTube, a thumbs down?
I'm sure I have. I don't remember why I have.
Yeah, it's maybe, got a lot maybe of thumbs up. And very
maybe good. For comedic purposes, if I saw a video with like a million thumbs up and no thumbs down, I'd want to,
oh,
you know,
so you're like
troll.
The troll of YouTube. Anyway.
No, I'm not saying I am. I'm just saying.
All right. Now that I agreed to watch that video, I'm no longer held hostage, right? We can move Oprah to the next round.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, this is a tough one. Two of the more surprising candidates to be in the round 32. We have a couple athletes as we begin the second quadrant. Serena Williams and Magic Johnson.
Yeah. So to me... Not really, you know, more tough than any of the ones in the other bracket. But to me, Magic clearly advances here. Serena is not, you know, Magic is one of the, let's say, top seven basketball players of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Serena, across both genders, also for sure one of the top seven, maybe one of the top three, you know, tennis players of all time.
Sure.
Top two, maybe even. But basketball, much bigger influence
True.
Than tennis around the world.
If we were just going by best in a sport, then Michael Phelps wins the whole thing, or at least he's the best athlete.
And Serena's cultural influence, you know, is very big, but I think Magic's is bigger.
Sure. Warren Buffett versus Barack Obama.
You know, a tough matchup for Buffett here.
All right, wait,
obviously.
So they had this article, and tell me some of your takeaways from Obama and what you learned about him that maybe makes him better or worse in your eyes from this long Jeffrey Goldberg article today.
So... Another guy, Yoni Applebaum, who I
by the way, how does Goldberg get, like, he has he like can get any interview with any world leader, and he, you know, he works for the Atlantic, which is like a decent magazine, but I can't imagine as a huge sort of like reader base. It's not like the New York Times or anything. So how does he land these interviews?
Well, because he's sort of seen as the most influential, especially vis-a-vis Israel and the Middle East, the most influential journalist, frankly.
Right, because he can get Netanyahu also. He's the only one that Netanyahu will probably...
Well, no, a lot of people will. He's just, you know, he has credibility on all sides. He's seen as sort of a moderate, you know, which means, of course, that people on the right hate him as a self-hating Jew and people on the left hate him as a fascist Zionist.
Sure,
you know,
yeah.
But anyway, so, you know, like you, I know nothing about Star Trek. But I still understood this analysis, which is Yoni Applebaum, who's a historian at
Harvard.
This
is the best thing you ever said, that you know nothing about Star Trek. Keep going.
Yeah. His take on the cover story, he said, Obama is a Spock governing a nation of Kirks. So again, I don't know what a Spock or Kirk is.
I hear
is,
what
but
he's
I,
saying. Yeah, he's
I
very,
still understood what he's saying. He's sort of prides himself in being sort of hyper-rationalist, non-emotional, which is also sort of a self-fulfilling. It's a great way to describe yourself, obviously. Mm-hmm. You know, and frankly, I like to describe myself that way when it comes to sports and politics also, which is, you know, let's not look – or we were talking about NFL free agency. You know, the Kirks want to sign big-name guys and want to brag about, oh, our team's going to win the Super Bowl because look at all these free agent signings that we just made in March, whereas the Spocks say, you know, like, you know, let's look at this more objectively. So, you know, that's obviously a favorable description from Obama's perspective. Mm-hmm. I've been disappointed in Obama's foreign policy for sure, but, you know, Obama would argue it's because I sort of want to see – emotionally, I want to see him take actions that the question is, do those actions actually have long-term benefits or negatives? So my biggest frustration for sure with the Obama administration vis-a-vis foreign policy has been Syria, where we've basically witnessed a genocide over the last 5 years. And I've sort of said things blithely because I'm not a foreign policy expert, like, well, why don't we, you know, enforce a no-fly zone? Now, that was obviously before Russia started bombing, because that would basically – today, that would mean going to war with Russia. But I said that in 2012, for example, during the election between Obama and Romney. And people like Hillary and other more liberal interventionists have argued for a no-fly zone as well. And so I have people to point to as support. But if Obama were to say to me, and what is the benefit of that? I'm not sure how I would answer it, other than it just seems to me frustrating that we do nothing as we witness a genocide.
I hear what you're saying. And that bright note.
What's your take? You asked me my take.
Hold on. Antonio says, politics aside, in 100 years, we're all going to be talking about the incredible cultural moment and movements with which Obama is inextricably linked. I do think, you know, the scene of him being elected and people celebrating in the streets throughout the United States is an iconic moment, which will be in the history books. Warren Buffett is certainly an interesting fellow. But he's no match for Obama. So this is another route. And welcome to the round 16, Barack Obama.
Yeah. So here's my comment on Obama.
Let me ask you a question. Also, if you had to guess right now, assuming nothing interesting happens in the last 9 months, where do you think Obama will land on the presidential rankings? Because the economy is doing a lot better right now. While you could say the United States standing has slipped a little bit in the world, it's still pretty comfortably number one, which who knows what will happen in 4 or 8 years. And it's interesting because you're talking foreign policy, because that article was only about foreign policy, but that's certainly not his main concern. He has, you know, been laser focused mostly on, like most presidents are, because there's no real active war going on domestic things, which is his main concern. And his approval rating is as high as it's been in a couple of years. So where do you think he ends up? I mean, I think ultimately the answer is probably it depends what happens with the healthcare, because that's sort of his number one legacy. But I'm curious what you have to say.
Yeah. So you mentioned healthcare, and I think on foreign policy, it's the Iran nuclear deal, which Obama has argued himself. He has said, and it was repeated in the Goldberg article today, I'm going to be around in 20 years and I'm going to have a stake in this. You know,
right. It was interesting to hear him say that. I guess he had said it before and he was just quoting it, but he admitted that the blood will be on his hands if that goes awry.
Yeah. Which is, you know, another thing he said in the article, which, again, is meritorious, but again, it's from his perspective, obviously, is that he wants to leave a clean slate for the next president, whereas, obviously, George Bush left him a rather dirty slate, you know, both in terms of, you know, ongoing wars and the economy, et cetera.
Right. But a Republican, like if Ted Cruz, let's say, gets into office, or, you know, Donald Trump is such a wild card, but let's say Ted Cruz got into office, like so much of Obama done, for good or bad, would be erased immediately, possibly. You know, obviously that would be Cruz's agenda.
One of the ridiculous things, which sort of, again, more sort of objective, rational people have been pointing out on Twitter repeatedly over the last few months, is you watch these debates, especially the Republican debates, and they imply that America is like going into a tailspin and things are terrible. Things are better in this country now than they've almost ever been. The economy is incredible. You know, things are going really, really
well. You could say in 2000, you know, the September 10th, 2011,
and then in the
is probably the
90s, things were really good also. But
people were coming off, you know, homeless people people were becoming, you know, worth being worth $100 million because they had some startup then.
Yeah, but some of that was based, frankly, on an unsustainable, you know, housing market, for example, that ended up, you know, screwing us over royally, you know, a decade later. But yeah, but not to get too much into that. So anyway, so one of my takes, which I was going to save, but Ben Antonio sort of referenced it, so I'll mention it now, is, and I thought this from the day he got elected, and again, this is not a hot take, I'm sure many people thought this, like Barack Obama is the only president that we've had in recent years, or that we will have, who I expect his face to appear on money someday. Now, because we live in such a hyper-partisan era, no matter who you are, and you know, this was true for Clinton, and this was true for Bush, and this is true for Obama, and this is 100% going to be true for the next president, whoever it is, half the country is going to hate them because we're in such a hyper-partisan era. And so when you make an argument like Barack Obama, his face is going to be on a dollar bill one day, people are going to be like, oh, no way, you know, because, oh, half the country hates
Well, it's really like 40% and 40%, and then there's a middle of 20. But, it's not like his approval rating is 51%. Yeah, but it's in the 60s.
Yeah, but with the benefit of time, I think that he will be seen more favorably beyond his policies for the cultural and historical and racial impact of his of just his election, frankly. Yeah, and I think his policies, so you ask, I think that he'll probably be in the upper half towards the middle, frankly. It's hard for any president to crack the top 10 unless he wins, like, you know, a world war or something like that, you know, like FDR and you know, and Lincoln, for example, have huge advantages for obvious reasons. And it's also hard for anybody just because we live in such a partisan era where it's very hard for anybody to get a lot done because of congressional intransigence. So I think that he'll probably be towards the upper half. Look, Bill Clinton has gone down, I think, in the last 5 or 10 years because he's seen, you know, as his triangulation and his policies, which were sort of more revered in the 90s when things were going great. Now people say, well, you know, did he do as much as possible to prevent Al-Qaeda? Did he do as much as possible to rein in, you know, sort of, or by loosening regulations, you know, that he helped to lead to some sort of the economic downfall that came a few years later. So I think Bill Clinton has gone down a little bit in the last 5 or 10 years in some of these rankings. So it's always hard to know. Look, a guy like Harry Truman went when he left office was seen as one of the worst presidents and now is seen as one of the best presidents. So you never really know over the course of time in history. But I think Obama will be judged mostly favorably.
OK, next matchup, Michael Jordan versus Jay-Z. And when we had Jay-Z versus Kanye West would look to Anna Wintour for advice, but Anna Wintour would never look to Kanye West. Well, I like what Antonio had to say here because he said the same thing along the lines of, you know, first he says between MJ and Jay-Z, both are considered by many to be the greatest alive in their field and both have some unsavory elements and connections, but MJ has by far the greatest impact. I don't think MJ would ever talk about wearing Jay-Z's shoes or anything Jay-Z related. But Jay-Z would, you know, would call himself the Michael Jordan of rappers. So I think that's a good argument.
Yeah, MJ's post-playing career has not been great. But you said
he's still the owner of a professional basketball team that, you know, sucks. Has quadrupled in value. Sucks, but it's quadrupled in value since he bought it.
Yeah. But, you know, you said both Jay-Z.
You know, and like we can't even fathom like how big, like his, like he was big enough that he took one of the biggest companies in the country and basically had his own imprint, which is like half the company.
Yeah.
That is enormous. Yeah. You know, so his, like his impact just in the shoe game still, where he's known for his shoes now by the millennials, and not us, the real millennials.
The Jumpman logo, I think, basketball has more cachet than the NBA, you know, the Jerry West logo, frankly.
Yeah.
By the way, you know, you talked about how he bought a team, and well, look, all team valuations have skyrocketed. Sort of a funny thing, Trump was bragging that he was offered to buy the New England Patriots in 1988, and he turned it down because it was a bad deal. And I was like, how is that a brag? You know, any NFL franchise has increased like tenfold at least since 1988, if not more, especially the Patriots.
Right. And by the way, had he
Patriots fans are overjoyed that he did not buy them for sure.
Oh, I mean, the team would be in St. Louis right now.
And they'd be called, yeah, they'd be called the St. Louis Classy Trumps. And they would be, their uniforms would be all gold for sure. Yeah, but Michael Jordan is the best basketball player of all time. And that's like objectively the case. You know, I have obviously, and we'll discuss this at some point, my basketball rankings. And I also have the rankings of like 10 other rankers. And MJ is number one on every single list. Number two, immediately there's a disagreement, whether you put Wilt or Kareem or whoever. Everybody says MJ is number one.
I worked with a guy named Elliot Cobb, KLB, at NBC. And he's called Mr. Stats. And he wrote a book, which because I'm a huge nerd and I, you know, in my house when I was a kid, I had a better sports library than the library near my house, which was a good library. Like I had more books. I had better books than they did. Like I had stuff they didn't have. And so I had this book because my dad would like every Friday just buy me a sports book. So I had this book, which was his 50 greatest players of all time. And he had Shaq number one. So when I met him And I hadn't thought about the book. I hadn't seen it in a while. But the first thing I was like, wait. And I said it respectfully, but I'm like, do you still think that, would you still have Shaq number one today? And he made like a whole case for Shaq, which I know. Where do you have Shaq on your rankings?
I'm a big Shaq guy, and I think that Shaq is underrated historically. People forget how ridiculously dominant. He was more dominant than any other player that we've ever seen in his era. So I think the Shaq gets a little underrated. Obviously, number one is insane, but I have Shaq all time at number five.
Okay.
And as an example, you know, I'm looking across all the other rankings I have. Only Slam Magazine, who had him at four, and that was in 2011. Mm-hmm. Everybody else has Shaq between like 7 and 13.
Right.
So I think most people underrate Shaq. He was more dominant by far than Tim Duncan, you know, Kobe Bryant, anybody else from our era. But to put him number one is crazy talk, right?
Yeah. Okay, so Tiger Woods versus Steven Spielberg, an interesting matchup. Tiger the best at what he does. Spielberg the best at what he does. Antonio says, Spielberg, I'm on team. Nicholas is better anyway, so he's saying he's the second best golfer. And the second best golfer can't beat our most prolific and successful filmmaker. I mean, most of their impact is in one field. I'm not knocking anything Steven Spielberg has done outside
the movie world. Also start the Showa Foundation, and he's been sort of like the...
Yeah. No, yeah, that's true. Yeah, he definitely has. I mean, Tiger Woods is a charitable foundation, too.
And Tiger has also provided riches and economic growth to tons of, you know, cocktail waitresses around the country, I think.
That's true. And honestly, every single player on tour owes Tiger half their salary, because if you look at what happened to the per event sort of, gross that they would, you know, the payout for every event, it went up a zillion fold since he was there.
The game.
It's probably going down now that he's gone. And the sport basically died. Like, movies will be fine, just as fine, when the day Steven Spielberg is gone. Tiger Woods has been gone, and golf is in a absolute free fall, and golf companies are closing, and it's literally a disaster for golf. It's the sport in this country in the worst shape of all the big sports. So Steven Spielberg, round of 16.
Okay, so let's pause for a second. So we finished the left half of the bracket. We're down to 24 teams. Half of the Sweet 16 is set. In NCAA...
Do you have a name for the 24?
No.
The terrific 24.
No, I have the terrific 2 is what I also named the final 2, because, of course, there was no name for that one either.
Did you have a lot of imaginary friends when you were
little? Yeah, I had a whole imaginary league.
Oh, my God.
All right.
I don't want to
hear it. Okay, so...
It's a miracle you're married.
In NCAA terms, it's Saturday night. We've just seen half the teams play their way into Sweet 16, and now we cut to Kenny and Chuck in the studio, and they're talking about, so, you know, how did the day go? And they're going to say, this was a very boring day. We had 8 games.
Sure.
We had nothing go to overtime. We had no arguments.
Nothing.
Our listeners are pissed.
Yeah, it's 8 double-digit wins, for sure. Our listeners are probably tuned out.
You know, much like the tournament, people want to see buzzer beaters. People want to see us yelling at each other, screaming, arguing with each other. And we're not going to do it artificially. It depends on the matchups. And we had
this is not first take where it's like we're Mike and Mike, where they're not allowed to pick the same game.
So let's turn to Sunday's matchups now. You know, let's see the final 8 matchups to see the final 8 spots in the Sweet 16, and let's see if we can get any better matchups. And we're going to start with Bob Dylan against George W. Bush.
Okay, Antonio Cole, Bob Dylan, our greatest living poet, and maybe one of a handful of writers that'll be living writers will be studied and discussed hundreds of years from now. Obviously, the book on George W. Bush is Decision Points. No, the Bush George W. Bush is well known. You know, the only way you could make a case for W here is if you're saying that like a president basically has to beat a singer. But clearly that's not what we're saying. We already eliminated one president in Jimmy Carter, and I think I'm happy to eliminate George W. Bush here. Bob Dylan, you know, he was just in the news a tiny bit this week. He's coming out with a new album, which I think is like 47th album or something like that. And he's not on a day-to-day basis relevant, considering how famous he is. You don't see, he's not like Paul McCartney, where he's hanging out with Lorne Michaels,
he's
showing up, but that's not
guy.
His thing.
Yeah, he's not like a hobnobber and a partier.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. Dylan's going to advance here. But again, I'm biased because he's a Jew from Minnesota. Okay, next matchup, Muhammad Ali against Howard Stern.
Next,
easy win here. So yeah, still no tight matchups here in this.
I'm going to say right now, Bob Dylan, Muhammad Ali is going to be interesting.
All right. Well, we'll have to wait till next weekend to get to that one.
Okay. Colin Powell versus next week. We're not going past.
No, I'm saying in NCAA tournament terms, right? You have your Sweet 16 set on Sunday, and then you wait till Thursday.
I'm not sure. I'm getting bored of you. So maybe we'll stop after this round, and we'll do like one round a week. I'm not
so
sure.
We'll see what happens. All right. Next matchup.
Okay. Colin Powell versus Tony Morrison.
So I will give you a hint here. I had sort of gone through on the bracket Excel spreadsheet, and I had already entered everybody into the next round. The only two who I didn't enter, the only sort of the toughest matchups, I think, are the two matchups in this mini bracket, this game and the next game. This is a really tough one. So I want to hear your take first.
Yeah. And this is tough because I don't. OK, so I don't think that either of them would be locks for the Sweet 16. You know, if we were just picking the 16 best, neither of them would make it, I don't think. Now, again, I've mentioned, you know, the Beloved is probably going to be more impactful than anything Colin Powell did. Antonio felt that Toni Morrison should make it. Powell's a cultural icon, to be sure, but he's going to be saddled with those nasty WMD issues legacy was. By the way, do you know how it, like, and you know I'm very anti-conspiracy theorist, but, you know, people who think that, like, George Bush was in on anything, I'm sure this point's been made 1,000 times, but, like, if he was smart enough to do that, wouldn't he have planted some fake WMDs or planted just some WMDs just so it wouldn't be a huge stain on his legacy?
Yeah.
Like, he should have done that anyway. Like, I'm anti those things. Like, he should have done that.
You can't engage with
like
conspiracy theorists on, like, the logic and the merits, because that's...
I don't think... Yeah, of course not. But he still should have planted some. Anyway, I got Toni
Morrison.
All right,
I'm going to vote for Colin Powell. Here's the interesting thing. Toni Morrison, perhaps our greatest author, you know, very influential cultural figure. Remember...
So what's Colin Powell the best at?
She was the one who called Bill Clinton our first black president. Right? That was, you know, she sort of coined that term.
Uh-huh.
Here's the thing. We're not a nation of readers. This is the greatest living American. Americans don't read, you know. We go to war. Colin Powell, he's a war hero, you know. He's the only general on this list. He was a war hero, and you said what's he the best at? He's probably our greatest general or soldier other than Schwarzkopf. Is Schwarzkopf still alive?
No, I don't think so.
Otherwise, yeah, he would have been in this probably.
The problem is every war general has like some ridiculous blunder on their hands. That I couldn't.
Okay, and Mike.
No, he was
Mike,
dead. I did. We were going to add on him. Yeah, I was going to add him. But he's dead.
Yeah, and Michael Jordan missed a lot of game-winning shots. Also, nobody's perfect.
Okay, so the case for Toni Morrison: she won a Nobel Prize, she won a Pulitzer Prize, she won an American Book Award. She's not just a one-hit wonder. She has a Presidential Medal of Freedom.
Okay, Colin Powell. Again, I think that Colin Powell could have been president if he had wanted to be. That's an argument in his favor. He was, as we said, he was the first black member of the Joint Chiefs. He was the first, I think, probably black Secretary of State. He really, he transcends party. He transcends race. He transcends politics. I think both of these people, you know, you said neither one belongs in the Sweet 16. I think both of these people will still be, you know, will have a good name recognition 50 years from now.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
But
okay.
I just think, look, again, like.
Neither of them are a contender to win. I think we're both
okay. Sure. If
that.
You identify sort of America by what America's most known for, I'm voting for Colin Powell over Toni Morrison.
Okay, Toni Morrison. She's on the editorial board of The Nation.
Yeah, that's what I feel about The Nation. Also, no, we're leaving that in.
No, definitely do not. okay. Toni Morrison's on the editorial board of The Nation that employs Dave Zirin, who's a huge loser. And
oh, shots
so
fired.
For that, I put. You hate him also. You know, I'm doing this because I'm not gonna. It's not a hill I'm willing to die on, the Toni Morrison.
Oh, wow. Colin Powell advancing. Okay, so how do I mark this on the sheet? I'm going to mark this as let's say, a 5-4. The other ones I have is 2-0. So,
we're doing a basketball theme, so this is like 81-80.
Wait, did we go to one overtime or two? I think we only went to one. You conceded pretty quickly.
One overtime. Right. Yeah. This was,
Powell advances over Morrison. Not much of an argument. Akiva caved a little too early. Next one, Tom Hanks versus Bill Clinton, the two giants of the 90s.
Yeah, I mean, I love Tom Hanks, and there are people I think he could beat, but to me, this is a no-brainer. Bill Clinton, iconic guy. Again, great doesn't just mean, like, the best, you know, for him to have the scandal in office. And there is a very good chance, probably better than 50% chance, that he's going from POTUS to, I don't even
first
know what
gentleman,
call it.
First gentleman, I think is what they've said.
Yeah, the first dude, I think.
Fagotis.
So to me, that's really fascinating.
And by the way, Hillary,
also he makes a lot of money.
Hillary first round matchup, very unfair to Hillary because
very unfair. Hillary would have beaten most of these people,
probably,
especially since we're sort of like working with the knowledge again. Because as we said in January, if she's the first female president, she's in the final four probably automatically.
It's that was a really tough matchup for her. If we do.
We should have given her like Leon Letterman or somebody, Donald Trump. We should have done Hillary versus Trump.
Well, we're waiting for November to get that opportunity. We'll vote on that, and we will let all the fans vote for that as well. Oh, well, if they're American citizens over the age of 18 who haven't been convicted of a crime, then a registered vote. Okay, so now we're going to Neil deGrasse Tyson versus Al Gore, probably two of the biggest popularizers of science in the aughts. Al Gore, sort of the one who sort of helped, you know, popularize global warming. He also obviously was, you know, fundamental in the creation of the internet. Whether or not he invented it, of course, is a argument for another day. Neil deGrasse Tyson, as we said, if we were doing like the greatest scientists, I don't think he'd even appear on the top 50. But his
which is why I think Gore has to make it.
So Neil deGrasse Tyson, really his biggest value is popularizing science, but Gore popularizes science plus does a bunch of other stuff. And obviously, you know, the only person to ever win a presidential election and yet not become president for various reasons, some of which we can credit to Sandra Day O'Connor, who he is also going into the 2016 with. Okay, so now we have John Glenn versus Clint Eastwood. To me, this is probably the weakest matchup in the second round. This is like an 11 versus a 14.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, I should add, Antonio had a different take than us. He said that Neil deGrasse Tyson should have won. Popularizing science and making science cool, regardless of race, is a major, major deal because it's so lacking from society and so few people do it. Well, agreed. That he's a minority and doing that, having grown up in the Bronx, make me feel like his achievements will probably never get their due, much like Al Gore never getting credit for a few votes he cast to help fund the projects that made the World Wide Web more connected. Actually, it's not like that, because casting a few votes is not inventing the internet. Sorry, Al. I agree. Like we said last week, if Al Gore invented the internet, he'd be number one. We're really high on this list. We're not giving him credit for that. But to me, it's more of a case against Neil deGrasse Tyson that nobody's convincing me that he is, you know, like the GOAT scientist or anything. So John Glenn versus Clint Eastwood, he's clearly inferior to Steven Spielberg.
Yeah, I'm not a big astronaut guy. I don't know why Glenn was in here at all.
Neither am I. I don't care about science.
You love
science
astronauts.
Is like my black
You're the
hole.
One
I don't
who kept putting
science.
You wanted in Neil Armstrong was not even alive.
Yeah, well, I thought he was alive. If he was alive, yeah. That's a good job, Neil. But
all right, so John Glenn.
No, I really don't care about science.
Here?
John Glenn, not one of the most. You know, the John Glenn Al Gore to the lead eight. That's like George Mason.
That's what I'm saying. This is like, but that'd be true of Clint Eastwood also. All right, so now we have what is by far the best matchup in the lower right quadrant.
I agree, but I also think it's
the
obvious
winner of this
win.
Heavy, heavy favorite to go to the Final Four
to make the Final Four. I agree, but to me, it's not even.
All right,
an
so
argument.
Let's look. We got two short Jews whose names end in Berg. You know, but both made billions of dollars. Mark Zuckerberg made it through Facebook. You could say he's a one-hit wonder, but that one hit has transformed the world in so many ways. You know, that one hit was responsible, you could say, for revolution in Egypt, for example. Bloomberg, a fantastic business person. Obviously, a media mogul, not as high profile, let's say, as Ted Turner or Rupert Murdoch, but his business essentially is media. You know, Bloomberg is a media company. He was also a fantastic mayor. He's a guy who, as we said, would probably be a good president. He just doesn't have a political party. Did you read, by the way, his article this week?
No, I didn't read what Bloomberg had to say. I wanted him to run. And
so
I
Bloomberg
sure
wrote an op-ed this week about why he's not running. And he basically said, look, I think there's no candidate I love in either party right now. He criticized both parties for, what he sees as their excesses right now in different directions. He said he thinks he could win some states, but he definitely could not get to 270, which means it would go to the House of Representatives. And he said, if I were to run for president, the most likely outcome would be that I would guarantee that either Donald Trump or Ted Cruz would become elected. And that's because Republicans hold, the way that it would go to the House of Representatives, it's one vote for each state and whichever party has more representatives from that state. And
right. But he's not. I think he's overestimating his appeal.
Well,
of course,
he's overestimating his appeal because every politician is going to overestimate their own personal appeal. But the point is that his argument.
I mean, I think the soda stuff might just scare away middle America. Like, you better not take away our sodas. You could have our guns before our soda. Yeah.
So anyway, he basically said the punchline of his article was, if I were to run, the most likely outcome would be that either Ted Cruz or Donald Trump would become president, and that is completely untenable, and we can't allow that to happen. So he's dropping out of the race. If Bloomberg were to run for president, he would probably win this one. But you're going to argue for Zuckerberg, and I think I'm going to concede. Although, to me, this is a really close matchup.
And to me, it has to be a knock against him that the absurd third term.
What do you mean? That he was the third term mayor of New York? Why is it? That's a knock for him.
Yeah, he changed the no. You mean because he's an evil like?
No,
movie
because
villain?
He was so good that he did it, and everybody was okay with it. Look, FDR also.
The people weren't okay with it. He hoodwinked the 10 people he needed to hoodwink.
And people weren't okay with it. So why did he win the election in a landslide?
His appointed successor. He faced against literally nobody good was willing.
But why
to
was
face
that?
Him.
Because he was
he
so
faced, like. He faced like a janitor in elementary school, and he beat him 55% to 45%, or even
and
less.
I know,
he didn't even beat him by a lot.
How much he spent, and I think he outspent the guy like $69 million to $1 million or something like that. Ridiculous. All right.
Yeah, the fact that he only won by a couple points was a repudiation against Bloomberg.
Well, also, frankly, and I think there's always a little fatigue after two terms.
There's no fear he would do a third term as president because he'd be like 92. So I think
also we have a constitution that prevents that. Would you have voted against FDR in 1942 for the same reason?
And I've seen Hamilton, so I know that Alexander Hamilton wrote that Constitution.
Would you have voted against FDR in 1940 for the same reason? Oh, no third terms. Would you have been like the guy who tried to assassinate TR when he was running in the Bull Moose Party in 1912 was because he was against the guy running for a third term?
I don't know. I'd have to go back. I can't speak hypothetically. I'm only in reality here.
Yeah.
Big tournaments amongst people.
All right. So you're hardcore against third termers. All right, so we'll put Zuckerberg ahead here, and who is Zuckerberg going to match up against? It's either Eli Wiesel.
You were anti. It's Eli Wiesel versus Mandan, and you were anti Eli Wiesel making it that far. I feel like we showed him some respect by putting him in 32. But culturally, I think it has to be Madonna. Yeah.
She's a more famous Jew, even though she's not one. All right, okay. So now we have our Sweet 16. The podcast has been going on for a little under an hour so far, depending on how much of this I have to edit out. So why don't we jump in and swoop into the Elite Eight, and we'll see what happens. And we'll see, you know, that was a very lame round. No good matchups. The only one where we even had a mild disagreement was Colin Powell against Toni Morrison. And you folded rather pathetically in that one, if I may say so myself. So let's jump into the Sweet 16. And why don't we start in a different bracket, in a different quadrant this time? Keep things interesting. Where do you want to start?
No, I want to start at the top. I'm like
you're very linear. All right. Does it annoy you in the tournament that they don't do, like, they don't, you know, for example, the Elite Eight is a couple of teams from each bracket, or the Sweet 16, you know what I mean?
Because I used to mark when I ran NCAA tournament, I mean, I still run NCAA pool, but
it was annoying.
But not by hand anymore. And when I did by hand, I liked when they would have, like, you know, one bracket, you know, I didn't care if it was like left and right, but it's very hard to mark all over the thing.
But they don't do it.
But also,
they don't do
after
it,
you've done a few. No, well, now they did it much more back then. Now they do pods of four, and back then they did pods of eight. But this is not interesting to anybody. So, George H.W. Bush versus Sandra Day O'Connor. I think this is an obvious win for.
So Ronald Reagan's two highest profile selections, right? He selected Bush in 1980, and he selected O'Connor in, what was it, 85?
And his third highest profile selection just died, RIP.
Oh, too soon.
Not going to her funeral either. Deal with it. Is that a mistake? Should the president go to her funeral?
No, because no sitting president ever goes to the funeral of a former first lady. The sitting first lady does traditionally. Like,
oh, is she going?
Yeah, she is going. Lady Bird Johnson died, and so George Bush's wife went. Like, I saw a chart.
I didn't know that.
Like, no sitting president goes to a former first lady's funeral. Okay. But is that a controversy?
I don't know why.
News?
I feel like that's like a dumb sort of.
Well,
tradition.
It's not a rule or tradition. It's just like he's got a lot of shit to do, and like, you know, I'm not. Mm-hmm. I don't know what his schedule is this week.
Okay, you don't know his schedule. Yeah. Okay.
So you're gonna say
this is a Titanic match.
You're gonna say Sandra Day O'Connor in a walk here.
Yeah, in a walk. Right. I mean, listen, not as big of a walk as you know. Some other matchups we've had, but I feel like ultimately the winner should be Sandra Day O'Connor.
Yeah. See, you know, we said, you know, even today, George Bush getting more credit even than he previously did. You have to give him credit for the fact his son was also the president. I mean, that's like huge. We've had one other father-son president, but that was 200 years ago. Mm-hmm. And also, like, they were only present 8 years apart, which is kind of crazy.
Now, you could say that, fine, the knock against any Supreme Court justice is it, one person decided that they have the job, and then they're there for life, whether they're good or bad. So, yes, it is an incredible accomplishment that Ronald Reagan chose her to be the first female Supreme Court justice.
But she was also, you know, a very influential member of the court because, as we said,
I'm just saying in general, just being on the Supreme Court, the fact that she was just the first, you know, just the same as if Obama was the worst president ever, you know, it would be still good for his legacy that he was the first African-American president, but that wouldn't, you know, in a bracket like this help him. But for SDOC, I feel like she was an important.
Well, you're really
justice.
Big on that SDOC thing. I like it. I've just never heard it before. I've heard, like, obviously notorious RBG for Ruth Bader Ginsburg. By the way, Ruth Bader Ginsburg not on this bracket. A lot of people upset about that.
Yeah, it was too many.
Too many justices.
They're hard to really. All right. Analyze.
Okay, I'm gonna. I'll cave to you. I'll say. Sandy O'Connor.
Okay, Bill Gates versus Oprah Winfrey.
All right, yeah, this is the Titanic matchup. These are probably two of these were two early favorites for the final four, but, you know, that's how the bracket, you know, that's just how things worked out.
Well, let me ask you a question.
Facing each other way too early, yeah.
If Bill Gates ended up as the greatest living American,
would I be okay with that? Absolutely.
Would you be okay? If Oprah Winfrey, yeah.
I just listened to a podcast interview with Bill Gates, actually, this morning.
Oh, really?
Ezra Klein was interviewing him.
Do you think I could get him on the Seinfeld show?
If you promise to, like,
he goes on Reddit,
if you promise
he does
to
AMAs
donate like $100 million to like malaria or something like that.
We give $100 bucks to Jerry Seinfeld's wife's charity.
No, you don't. Someone else does because of your loquaciousness.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. I think that I would not be okay with Oprah winning The Greatest Living American at this point.
You know, even though I love Oprah. I don't know why Oprah is so big and so famous and why she's been for so long. You know, did you used to watch Married with Children?
I mean, I've seen it, but I
didn't. So one of the running jokes in Married with Children was like that Oprah Winfrey was a god to the mom in that show. Now, also, I think that show was based in Chicago, which is where Oprah got her start in the 80s.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, look, I'm not a daytime talk guy, you know, aside from the fact that you think I love Ellen for some reason. I'm going to vote for Bill Gates here, but this is a really tough matchup. I think these are the two of the final four, and it's a raw deal for Oprah to get matched up with Bill Gates here. How are you voting?
I agree. Oh, raw wow. deal. I think Oprah could have beaten a lot of people. In the bottom half, she could have, you know, her against Zuckerberg even would have been interesting. Her against anybody else in the bottom half, she's winning. She gets a really raw deal here. But I think that Gates is just a lock at this point. And again, she left her show, and yes, she has a channel, but you know, how many people watch that channel? She gets a lot of credit for the book club, as Antonio points out. You know, she really made reading cool, especially amongst the female population, which I feel like, and I don't have any stats for this, that women are bigger readers at this point in America than men.
I think they're bigger book buyers, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. I do think, so, you know, she's a very important person, but Bill Gates is going to have to.
All right, so poor one out for Oprah. She's definitely the biggest contender to lose so far.
Sure, yeah. Sure. Now we have Magic Johnson versus Barack Obama.
And the winner face Michael Jordan. So Magic and Michael with potentially a scintillating matchup to go into the Final Four.
Yeah, but it's not happening. I feel like Magic, it's great that Magic made the Sweet 16, but he's not even the best basketball player left in the bracket, and he's a basketball
player. And by the way, Obama is just marching through this tournament, knocking out his supporters, right? Jimmy Carter, Warren Buffett, Magic Johnson, all supporters of Barack Obama. Rather public supporters of Barack Obama. Carter's actually the only one who's not, but I mean, I assume he is. But, you know, Buffett and Magic, who obviously have been, you know, much higher profile in their support for him. And Obama's just eliminating.
Are you fine with Obama winning here?
Yeah, of course. Against Magic Johnson? Okay. Yeah. Okay. Now, Michael Jordan versus Steven Spielberg. This is a great matchup. The greatest basketball
great
player,
matchup.
The greatest movie maker. Great matchup here.
It is. To me, like, is Steven Spielberg, he's the most successful filmmaker. And Michael Jordan's the most successful basketball player. But Michael Jordan
if you define success merely as winning titles, you know, you'd say Bill Russell. But yeah.
Okay, but I don't.
Okay.
Now, Steven Spielberg, is he the greatest director of all time? I don't think he'd generally be considered that.
No. But again, that's not as...
I don't think any movie critic would ever say Steven Spielberg is the best director of all time.
But would we say, is he the most influential director of the last 40 years? You know, one of the criticisms of the Oscars frequently, and they've remedied this a little bit in the last couple of years, is the fact that they don't give enough to the popularity of movies, to the box office of movies, that when movies that made $11 million winning the Oscar over a movie that made $300 million, you know, that's a mistake because it's an entertainment industry and you're entertaining the masses. Spielberg entertains the masses but also makes excellent films. He's covered really every genre, obviously, you know, comedy, action, science fiction, history. I'm a nerd, but like I watch Lincoln like four times and I love that movie.
Okay.
You know?
All right, let's go through his movies quickly. Jaws.
If you don't think that I have a Steven Spielberg movie ranking chart, then you are grossly mistaken, because I do.
Okay. Jaws, Close Encounters, which I've never seen. You've seen that movie?
No. But I'm not a science fiction guy. But
how do you have that ranked?
I've seen Jaws.
How do you have that movie ranked?
I have movie rankings for a bunch of directors. Hold on, I'm opening up my best director's chart. Hold on. Dun, dun, dun,
give
dun.
Me his top 10 movies.
All right, so here we go. So here's my ranking of greatest directors. Oh, by the way, Martin Scorsese, how did he not make our list?
Too many directors.
Okay, so here we have Spielberg. He's and this is old. This is a couple years ago, so it doesn't have, for example, Bridge of Spies. But I have Spielberg having made 27 films at this point. He had he was nominated 6 times for best director, won twice, 6 times for best film, and won once. His average on Metacritic is a 70. His average on Rotten Tomatoes is a 78. So yeah, so you skipped Sugarland Express, but Jaws, which is has 100 on Rotten Tomatoes, for example. So let's just go through his big movies: Jaws, Close Encounters. I'm skipping the smaller ones: Raiders of the Lost Ark, E.T., Indiana Jones, The Color Purple, another Indiana Jones, Hook, which I actually really liked, even though Rotten Tomatoes hates it. It was a great kids movie, I thought. Jurassic Park. Listen to what he does in the 90s. Jurassic Park, Schindler's List, both in the same year. He made those both at the same time. That's
crazy.
Insane.
That's a lot of range also.
Yeah. Saving Private
Ryan. And the crossover movie was nuts.
Yeah.
It was bananas.
Saving Private Ryan, AI Minority Report, Catch Me If You Can, which is a very, very entertaining movie. A really good
movie. I like
movie.
That movie. I like it. It's almost like below. It's not the type of movie that he would have done before that. I mean, The Terminal is like a stain on his legacy.
Well, this is when he's into the Tom Hanks era. Yeah.
You hate Munich. Yeah, now he.
Munich's
get worse.
A very entertaining movie, I think.
I thought you were anti-Munich.
No, I really like Munich. There's also that great scene in
Knock Up
where they talk about Munich. Remember that scene?
Uh-huh.
Where they're in the club? Yeah. Then another Indiana Jones came and went, whatever. Adventures of Tintin, which I actually saw in theaters. War Horse, which was nominated, but this is the point where I think he's nominated for everything. And then Lincoln.
Yeah, anything he does is nominated at this point.
Lincoln, which as I said, I love. I mean, that's just dynamite, you know. MJ has
like
six
Bridge
titles.
Spies? I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, I did like Bridge of Spies. As I said.
MJ has six titles. He has one. His movies have only won Best Picture once, right?
Yeah, but nobody's winning Best Picture year after year after year just because of the way, you know.
Okay, I'm not anti-Spielberg at all, but to me, and Spielberg, both their legacies are mostly, you know, he could make one more great movie, but...
One more? He could make another 10 great movies. He's coming up with just every year.
He's turning 70.
He's been dominant from the 70s for 40 years, right? As we said, he was making Jaws in 1974. Right. So he's been 40 years at the top of his game. Now, it's unfair because a basketball player doesn't have that. But Michael Jordan, again, his post-career really flags when you compare it to Magic,
for example. Will there be another Spielberg or Jordan first? Neither of them are irreplaceable. Like, there could be another Jordan and there could be another Spielberg.
I don't know. It's a good question.
I mean, he also has, like, the breadth of what he does. Like, he's made so many movies.
Well, so here's the thing. LeBron
a lot of the
LeBron
top filmmakers
so,
don't make
yeah,
that
Yeah, LeBron is so good, but Michael Jordan was such a huge cultural icon. Michael Jordan was responsible for basketball going around the globe. But again, the thing to me...
Right, he was able to stay babyface his entire career, where LeBron hasn't even come close to doing that.
Yeah, but to me, the biggest thing for Michael Jordan is, post-40, he's done nothing. And, like, let's say, where do you see Michael Jordan going for the next 30 years? Because I really don't see a lot of good things for him. His post-playing career has not been great. He's the subject of a bunch of negative memes when he cries or when, you know, some stupid teenager says, what are those about his shoes? You know, his team sucks. Magic has such a great post-playing career. So many other guys do. Michael Jordan was the one who famously said, you know, Republicans buy shoes too. He never took a stance on any sort of important cultural or social issues, you know, the way that Spielberg obviously has, both in his films and also more explicitly. This is a really tough one. Michael Jordan's better in his industry than Steven Spielberg
yeah,
is.
Yeah, well, that's,
I
that's
agree
my
with
argument.
You about that. But who's, a greater, like who's a greater American? I'm going to vote for Spielberg.
I mean, I'm going to start off by saying Michael Jordan because ultimately he's the best basketball player. Spielberg is not the best director.
By the way, wouldn't you love to see this on a Twitter poll? Michael Jordan versus Steven Spielberg. This is
no.
I would love no, to I see what care. I would love to see what people think about this.
I wouldn't care at all. I want to know where critics would rank, you know, the greatest directors.
Well, so critics don't love Spielberg again because they have sticks up their asses and they don't like a guy whose movies all make, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars.
Okay, so AMC did a poll, the 50 greatest directors of all time.
Yeah, I know. He's number 4 on that list. That's part of my chart.
No, AMC's poll, he's not in the 50.
Wait, hold on a second.
He's checkmate. He's not in the 50. And oh, man. Clint Eastwood's 49. Clint Eastwood should not have made it this far. I don't even know.
No, I'm looking. AMC's greatest 50 directors. 1, Hitchcock. 2, Kubrick.
It's a fan poll. It's a fan poll. He's not in the top
1, Hitchcock. 2, Kubrick. 3, Scorsese. 4, Spielberg. 5, Coppola. What are you talking about?
This was a fan vote. It's like you could vote them up or down. He didn't make the top 50.
Okay, so maybe I'm looking at the chart that the AMC made and then fans voted on that or something. I don't know. But that's, anyways, okay. They have Spielberg 4. They have Scorsese ahead of them.
The Guardian, greatest living director. I'm at 21, 22. 23. I don't see his name. Spike Jones, 25. Michael Moore, 28.
But that's the point. If you have Spike Jones and Michael Moore ahead of Steven Spielberg, your list is invalidated. And that's my point. Critics.
But the idea that you could make a list of 40 people and not have him on it, that he's not worthy of being, you know, this far down the list.
See,
you know,
see,
this is
see,
this
to
is
me,
where the big boys
I'm,
hang
I'm
out.
I'm judging the list. I'm judging the person who makes that list. Now, here's the thing. The fact that the AMC list that I'm looking at has Martin Scorsese one spot ahead of Spielberg. That's a pretty big criticism, I think. Right? That maybe in his own era.
Yes.
And Scorsese,
yes.
Of course, never
maybe
won.
Maybe Marty should be here.
Scorsese never won until The Departed, which, you know, people agree was sort of more of a lifetime achievement, sort of like Leo, that he, you know.
Okay. EW, which is a pretty vanilla parv, as our people would say.
Yeah.
Sort of, you know, who's way more likely to have a guy like Spielberg higher than a more snooty poll, has him as 11. Find Fellini, Capra, Ingrid Bergman, Buster Keaton, Kurosawa, Scorsese, Howard Hawks, whoever that guy is, Hitchcock, Orson Welles, and John Ford. So not the greatest living director, 11th of all time. To me, put it in the books, no-brainer. Michael Jordan's number one. Spielberg's not number one. He can't go further than this right now.
I don't know.
We have to respect the list.
Again, I'm saying Michael Jordan better in his field than Steven Spielberg. I'm conceding that point. Beyond the field, who's the greatest? Who's a greater American? Who's a, you know, I still think it's Spielberg. And also, we talked about like culture.
If I said Michael Jordan is the Steven Spielberg of basketball players, would you be like, that's a normal thing to say?
No, and I actually have a funny story for that because it sort of combines Harvard hubris with New York City.
Wait, can I make a prediction?
Yeah. It's not going to be funny. Okay, fine.
Okay,
but,
don't tell it.
But okay, no, but this is another good example of people making ridiculous comparisons that says more about the comparison maker than the person. So at my orientation to law school, now I'm going to sound like an asshole, but I went to a tiny school outside of Boston. So Dean Kagan, who's now Supreme Court Justice Kagan, of course.
Oh my God, so many names are going to be dropped here.
At orientation, she said, Harvard Law School is the New York City of law schools. And it was such a fantastic thing she said, because that only works if you're such an arrogant New York hubris.
I love it.
Yeah, because to most people, to my wife.
And she's from New York, right?
Yeah, obviously, that's the point.
And what did your buddy Sonia say? Was she like, hell yeah?
Well, Sonia wasn't there. Sonia was a judge.
She
was a judge in New York at the time. But but my wife, who hates New York, even though this is where she lives and this is where 2 children have been born, my wife was like so apoplectic when I told her that story. Because my wife's response, which I think most people who aren't from New York's response would be,
she's from Florida, which is literally garbage.
No, she's from Michigan. But
But
my wife said, and I think most people would say, you can say so many better things about Harvard than it's like New York would like to say,
sure,
we're the Harvard of
you
cities.
You could be like 42 of the 43 presidents went here.
Yeah.
You know, we have exactly 8,000 Nobel Prizes.
But the reason I loved it is because it was so New York City, like Harvard hubris. It was so like,
shout out to your buddy Elena.
Yeah. She actually is my buddy. I got a bad grade in something. And I sent her an email about it because she would encourage us to do that. And she emailed me back immediately within 5 minutes. And she told me some of her grades her first year, some of which were quite poor as well. So, I mean, everybody, not to get too inside Harvard baseball here, but everybody at Harvard loved her. Right wing, left wing, teachers, professors, students. I mean, everybody.
How many of the 9 Supreme Court justices do you have a relationship with?
I don't have a relationship with her, but, she's the only one with whom I've ever had a conversation.
Would she know who you were if she met you on the street?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
Are you kidding? She's had thousands of students, but I'm just saying.
Okay, fine.
She was insanely loved on that campus. Everybody loved her.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways,
so many names drops.
Yeah, you're the one who's trying to imply out. You're like, oh, you have a personal. I don't have a personal relationship with her.
Yeah, but oh my God. Okay,
she once sent me an email. That's true. Okay. Okay. So I'm trying to remember
who's the most famous person in your phone.
Akiva Wienerker.
Besides me.
I don't know. Okay, Michael. You know who it used to be, actually? It used to be...
Robbie?
No, it used to be Wally Zerbiak.
Before he deleted his number when he said...
It used to be Wally Zerbiak. I got his number somehow. I don't even remember how. And I just thought it was really funny to have his number in my phone. Because this was also in the early aughts, before smartphones, when there wasn't a lot to do. And so people would scroll through other people's phone contacts sometimes is a thing to do.
Uh-huh.
And so I just thought it'd be funny for people to say, Wally Zerbiak?
You could just change some random person to Wally Zerbiak.
Yeah, I had an annoying friend who you might have also, Uri Berger.
What did he do?
He used to, this is the, during our year, our post-high school year, where one, and he's not a guy who drank a lot, but one night he got drunk and went into my phone and changed all my contacts.
That's very funny.
It was very annoying. So he changed himself to best guy ever or something. But a few days later,
that's not funny.
A few guys later, I was trying to text him and I couldn't find him. And I had to scroll through
and you were not looking under best guy ever because it's not.
But I ended up having to scroll alphabetically through every single person to find him because I was where the hell is it? And I was, anyways, yeah.
Sure.
Okay, we've really got off on a tangent here. So Michael Jordan versus Steven Spielberg. All right, I'll cave. Whatever. Michael Jordan.
No, because I'm right. I wasn't giving up.
This one went to 2 overtimes. I can't wait till Michael Jordan gets the crap beat out of him in the Elite Eight. All right, Bob Dylan versus Muhammad Ali.
Oh boy,
another Titanic matchup. I'm going to preemptively concede here. I want it to be Dylan, but Muhammad Ali's cultural impact massive.
Yeah, for whatever reason, Ali has aged, and I really don't like that the family parades him out now. He should not be seen in public anymore. I don't think.
It's Harper Lee-ish.
Yes, even worse. The incredibly thirsty Miami Marlins ownership, some of the worst people in the country, they paid him to basically to show up at the opening day of the Marlins Park, which was the last relevant day at the Marlins Park at their baseball stadium that they brag about hoodwinking the Floridian, the South Florida residents.
Did they even sell out with Muhammad Ali there?
Probably not. Yeah. When the president of the team went on Survivor in his like claim to fame on his like bio on the website said hoodwinking the stupid residents of South Florida. That was literally, go look now. He doesn't call them stupid, but that's his claim to fame, that they tricked the South Florida residents into spending their own tax money they don't have.
To be fair, South Florida residents nobody wants. Are probably the dumbest residents we have, right?
No, they're only rivaled by North Florida. North Florida is much dumber than South Florida.
See, these are the things you can't say on your Seinfeld podcast, because Rob has a constituency to a...
Yeah, there's probably someone who lives in Florida. but I remember
our Miami Dolphins fan in the preseason. Every time we'd bash Florida, he'd get upset.
I don't think he's still listening. Yeah. I think he probably gave up on us. But I do think, South Florida is terrible, but North Florida is like, that's where Casey Anthony is, you know?
Yeah.
I
think it's really Central Florida. That's the meat on the bones.
Central Florida. Yeah, you're right. Central Florida.
I've driven through there
near the good people of Georgia when you get up north.
By the way, can I say quite proudly, we had no Floridians on our list of greatest living Americans of the 68.
No, I mean, it would be impossible. I considered Casey Anthony, and I also considered that astronaut lady who like wore a diaper to go beat up.
How large would we have had to expand this tournament to find somebody who lived in Florida? Like 500?
I would not have allowed it had I known.
1,000?
I would not have allowed it.
I
mean, LeBron. No, LeBron would have been on. But he's not from Florida.
Yeah, and he moved back to Cleveland. Like, Cleveland is like the worst city in America, and LeBron moved back there. That's how bad Florida is.
I don't know if you know how Survivor works, but I wrote, like, if all 50 states played a season of Survivor,
yeah,
then Florida would be voted out. Like, they wouldn't even wait for the vote. They would just, like, he would be like, all right, the game's starting. Like, everyone's like, okay, let's start by voting at Florida, 49-1.
Yeah.
No one would have a problem with it.
By the way, second time in a week that someone mentioned the 50 states having... I'm sure you've seen this on Deadspin. There's Minnesota Hockey Hair. It's this ridiculous video this guy makes every year.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
But I didn't see the... I mean, I've seen it like...
Fantastic. It's highly entertaining, as it always is. And he talks about, you know, he's obviously a Minnesota homer. And he talks about if all 50 states had a battle royale, how Minnesota would do. And he obviously thinks they would do pretty well.
But it just in terms of like, I don't know how it would work in terms of like who's representing them, but clearly Florida is being voted out first.
Yeah, everybody hates Florida. If we could like, if we could somehow circumcise Florida, like sever it and let it float off into the ocean.
Oh, that would be great.
Yeah.
Do you remember when New Jersey was the laughingstock of the United States? Now it's, New Jersey's not, it hasn't made its full way up, but I feel like it's just a regular state now, and Florida has really...
New Jersey's bad, but it can't, like, I think Florida and Ohio are just the, because
New Jersey's also self-aware. New Jersey's self-aware.
Well, I don't know. I've met a lot of Guidos on the streets of Manhattan who are not aware.
I don't know if you could say that term. I'm not sure.
I'm not allowed to say that. Only they can say that.
I don't even think they
would. Rob Cesternino, if you're listening, he's Italian-American, right?
Yeah.
Do I have permission to say, am I profiling based on his last name? Am I allowed to say Guido? What if I say it as a term of endearment? Like, I love Guidos.
Would you say it in an email to Elena Kagan?
I love big, dumb, stupid Guidos.
You can't know that. You have to take out.
I'm not taking it out. No.
Yes.
What, are we going to lose our sponsors? Oh, by the way, this week's episode, I forgot to say.
We're PC.
This week's episode is sponsored by the Italian-American Defamation League.
Yeah, that's right. It's a...
By the way, did you read, there was a biography of Johnny Carson that came out a couple years ago that was written by his personal lawyer and like close friend?
No, thanks.
Okay, so Chuck Klosterman talked about it on a Bill Simmons podcast, and so I bought it. Mm-hmm. Incredible, incredible book. It is
By the way, that was the whitest sentence anybody's ever said. Chuck Klosterman said it on a Bill Simmons podcast, a book about Johnny Carson.
Yeah, written by his lawyer. Also Caucasian, shocker. Anyways, it's a really, really good book. But my favorite story in the book, which Klosterman said on the podcast, so I knew it was coming. And by the way, I'm a guy who, like, I love to spoil myself. For example, like, have you watched the Game of Thrones, the new trailer that came out?
Yeah. I saw the trailer.
And have you read the blogs that freeze frame?
No. I haven't freeze framed. I don't do that sort of thing.
So I've done it. It's incredible. I'm so excited for the things that are coming. You don't know what's coming, so I won't say. But anyways.
No, I have no idea.
I love when I know.
And even when I watch it, I won't know what's coming.
Exactly. I love when something great, I know it's coming, and it comes, and it's even greater than I expected. So anyways, in this book, I'm just going to tell the story because Klosterman said it on the Simmons podcast.
By the way, what if George R. R. Martin dropped the book out of nowhere, like, next week? That would be the biggest book ever, right?
Does he show up in Our Greatest Living Americans? No,
he's a giant fan.
He's out. That's not allowed.
He's out.
All right, goodbye. So let me tell you about this story. This is just a great story, and then we'll get back to our tournament. So Johnny Carson is sort of fooling around with some girlfriend of some mob boss. And so the mob boss gets pissed about it. So Carson thinks that a hit's been put out on him and he's going to be murdered. So he's staying locked in his room in his apartment in the city because he's literally afraid for his life. And he won't come out. And so his show doesn't play that week because he literally will not leave his house, which is kind of a problem for NBC. So NBC finagles. So NBC is kind of screwed because Johnny Carson won't come on TV because he's afraid he's gonna get murdered. So what they do is they and the lawyer is describing this in the book, they create a sit down with the head of the mob, and the head of the mob agrees as a compromise that he will let Johnny off the hook if in return NBC films live on TV nationwide, like the coming week or whenever it was, the Columbus Day Parade, which Columbus Day, as I'm sure you know, is sort of Italian American heritage.
Why does he care so much about the Italian Day Parade? Like, what my thing because would be like, I need a pilot and it has to go to eight episodes.
Because the mob created, and you know, again, here, I'm sorry.
And it's really
racist. Yeah, I'm sort of defaming Italian Americans here, but the mob sort of created Columbus Day Parade and Columbus Day as sort of a cultural, like, I'm sure it was a big thing in the Italian American community, but making it nationally seen as that was a thing that the mob did because the mob sort of wanted to hype it as a way to sort of profile Italian Americans in a more positive light.
I feel like that whole story is apocryphal.
I'm just saying it's in the book. I haven't researched it myself. So anyway, so the point is that this was shown, the parade was shown live on NBC, the entire parade from start to finish. No other channel showed it because this is like 1974. Like nobody else gave a shit about it. Nobody else even knew it existed. And this was on TV from start to finish. And everybody in America turned on their TV and said, oh, there's a parade today in Manhattan of Italian Americans. I wonder why this is on TV. And the reason is because Johnny Carson had fooled around with the mob boss's wife. And in return for putting that on TV, they let Johnny Carson, like they took the hit off him.
All right, that is a funny story.
It's a great story.
Okay, last three matchups quickly. And then I think we're done for the day. This has gone too long.
Okay, so we got Colin Powell.
The Elite Eight.
Colin Powell. Against Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton keeps matching up against 90s Titans. He had Tom Hanks, now he has Colin Powell.
But to me, I feel like just the nature of this matchup means Bill Clinton has to win.
Okay, all right. So Bill Clinton into the Sweet 16. Now we got Al Gore.
Right, dude, I mean, right? Like Colin Powell, not a president. Bill Clinton,
no, I agree.
Like
agreed,
a decent president.
Agreed. Al Gore versus John Glenn. Look,
what a weak matchup here.
Look, I didn't want John Glenn in the tournament at all, so I'm going to say Al Gore. But we said the Southeastern quadrant is the weakest one. So yeah. Al Gore advances here.
Just like in real life. Yeah, I think Al Gore has to advance, but he's going to lose to here. I'd put Madonna over Al Gore, but he's
Mark Zuckerberg versus Madonna. Of course, it's going to be Mark Zuckerberg.
Yeah, Mark Zuckerberg. So
we have an Elite Eight. Do you want to go to a Final Four and then save the Final Four for a podcast? I think we should. We're only at an hour 20 minutes.
I don't think so because there's you know what? I don't think we can because I do think Ali Clinton is tough, and I think Obama Jordan. Day O'Connor, I think they're tough matchups. So we have Sandra Day O'Connor versus Bill Gates, Barack Obama versus Michael Jordan, Muhammad Ali versus Bill Clinton, Al Gore versus Mike Zuckerberg. To me, let's save it for next.
Okay, so can we agree the two weakest Elite Eight contestants for sure, Sandra Day O'Connor and Al Gore?
No, Al Gore is by far the weakest.
Sandra Day O'Connor is.
Yeah, she's seventh. And I had a very good idea who was going to win or the final two from the start. And I don't think there's who's the best person who's been knocked out?
Oprah,
so far?
For sure. Oprah.
I guess Bob Dylan probably second.
Oprah should be in the final four, no question.
Yeah, sorry, Oprah. So listen, this wasn't seeded. So that's our final eight. Any other thoughts? We also, since this podcast started, I was batting around on Twitter with a couple of people this idea that I discussed with you. If we have one more non-sports week in the next few weeks, like the week between the NCAA tournament and the MLB preview, if we ranked. Like the 43 Hamilton songs from 43-1. We got rankings from anyone who wanted to submit them, and then we went down. Maybe I'll have you do a little work and play some of the clips.
This is too much. Honestly, it's too much work. Again, I think you're overplaying the popularity of Hamilton. And again, I love Hamilton.
I feel like people will listen to it.
You're trying to get me to do a lot of work.
You don't have to play the songs. You could play like two or three songs.
No, if we're not playing the songs, no one's going to listen. That's all anybody wants to hear. Nobody wants to listen to us.
Well, we can't play the whole songs. That'll get us booted off or whatever.
Yeah, all right. So I'm looking at our final...
Unless we sing them. Unless you and me want to sing
I'm looking
sing
at our
songs.
Final eight here. We got two presidents.
Yep.
We got a basketball player. We got a boxer. Yep. We got Zuckerberg and Gates, the two biggest, technology guys. We got Al Gore.
We got the first female Supreme Court Justice, and we have Al Gore. I have no idea.
One woman.
Al Gore should have lost to Donald Trump.
We got one woman, one Jew... three African Americans, one Muslim, Muhammad Ali, two if you include Obama, of course.
He's joking, guys.
Am I?
Yeah.
By the way, I want, except now I'm going to ruin it if I say this, I really want people to think that I actually do believe that the man on the moon is faked. Because I think, like, you know, I want to have some street cred as a guy who actually believes in ridiculous conspiracies.
But you don't actually believe that?
See, I'm saying I want to say yes because I want to keep it going. But, like, of all the conspiracies, and they're all dumb, the only conspiracy that I do believe in, or, you know, I don't believe that the JFK assassination was this clean cut. I don't believe that it was simply Lee Harvey Oswald.
No, it definitely was. I feel like history has basically proven that it was all Lee Harvey Oswald.
Yeah, see, I don't agree with that.
All the conspiracy theories have kind of come and died.
Well, I'm not
anyway,
saying I'm not
that's
saying
the final
that
eight.
Any,
I don't
I'm
even
not
know why we're
any
talking
other
about this.
Individual conspiracy I buy into.
Okay, whatever.
So yeah, so you're whatevering us already. All right, just yeah, one whatever. More time, so people know. here's our elite eight. Let us know your opinions. We got Sandra Day O'Connor facing Bill Gates. We have Barack Obama facing Michael Jordan. We have Muhammad Ali facing Bill Clinton, and we have Al Gore facing Mark Zuckerberg. So those are the.
It's almost embarrassing that Al Gore is
Boy,
still
stop
there.
Hating on Al Gore. Come on.
I guess we have to, at this point, we have to pretend like we think he invented
yeah.
the internet.
Those are the eight greatest living Americans, in the opinion of Akiva Wienerker.
Why? Three
and Alexander
Democratic
Chester.
Presidents.
Two.
Three Democratic presidents Two. Or vice yeah, presidents. Or yeah. vice presidents. One Democratic Supreme Court justice.
What? She was a Republican.
No
Sandra
Republican
O'Connor
politicians.
Republican.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Yeah. You're right.
She was a moderate.
No.
But...
Yeah. Not like today's Republicans. No Republican politicians.
Well, Sandra O'Connor was a Republican.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. So there you go. That's our Elite Eight. We will discuss it in a future podcast. Next week, though, I think.
Or maybe we'll never finish it.
Next week, I think we're going to preview March Madness, right?
Yeah, but maybe we'll do March Madness, and this is also our March Madness. Maybe we'll knock down from 8 to 4 next week.
All right. Okay. So that's definitely a possibility. We'll tweet out the bracket so you can see it, but later in the week, I think, because we want people to consume the podcast first without being spoiled.
Yeah, a lot of people complain about spoilers. Just kidding. Nobody saw it.
All right. So, Akiva, I will speak to you next week.
Whatever.